ever imagine buying a house and then bam, you get hit with a water bill from like 25 years ago from the original owner. You think, what is this? Some kind of crazy time warp.
Sounds wild.
It is. Yeah. But that's exactly the kind of scenario we're dealing with today in Eagle Enterprises v. Gross, a case that really impacted how New York deals with property covenants.
Yeah, some really interesting stuff there.
So we're going to dive deep into this legal battle today, exploring whether the obligation to buy water from a specific well could actually stick with the land itself, even with new owners.
It gets to the core of how we think about promises related to land and for how long those promises can actually bind people.
Right. Okay. So picture this. 1951 quiet subdivision in Orange County, New York, Orchard Hill Realties is selling a piece of property to the Baums. Pretty standard stuff, right?
Right.
But there's a twist.
Oh.
The deed includes a covenant requiring the Baums to buy their water from the seller's well for $35 a year.
Interesting.
And here's the kicker. They intended for this to apply to anyone who owned the land after them, too.
This intention is crucial. It's not just a contract between two people. It's meant to impact the land itself.
Exactly. It's like attaching this obligation to the property itself.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So now fast forward to 1976. Mr. Gross buys the property, but plot twist. The water covenant is missing from his deed.
Oh, wow.
So naturally, he's like, awesome. Builds his own well and refuses to pay Eagle Enterprises.
Who are they?
They took over from Orchard Hill. And they are not thrilled, let me tell you.
Makes sense.
They decide to sue.
I bet. So this is where the case gets really interesting, legally speaking.
Okay, bring on the law.
Because New York uses a three-part test to determine if a covenant runs with the land, meaning it's binding on future owners.
Like a legal checklist.
Exactly. The test comes from a previous case, Neponset.
All right, I'm taking notes.
First, did the original parties intend for it to bind future owners?
Okay, makes sense.
Second, was there a legal relationship tied to the land called privity of estate?
Okay, I'm following.
And third, and this is huge E in Eagle Enterprises, does the obligation actually affect the land itself? This is the touch and concern element.
Okay, break that last one down for me. What does touch and concern even mean in this context?
It's about whether the obligation is so closely connected to the land that it should be considered part of owning it.
Okay.
Rather than just a separate agreement. Think of it like this. If the obligation directly impacts the use and enjoyment of the property itself, it likely touches and concerns the land.
So like an easement allowing someone to cross your property to reach theirs, that would probably pass the test.
Exactly. It directly affects how both properties can be used. Now back to Eagle Enterprises.
Right. The showdown in court.
The court agreed that intent and privity existed, no problem. But when it came to touch and concern, that's where things went south for Eagle Enterprises.
Wait, I'm a little confused. Doesn't having access to water directly affect a property? I mean, it's pretty essential to live there.
You'd think so, right? But the court focused on the fact that Gross wasn't dependent on Eagle Enterprises for water. He had his own well.
Oh, I see.
So to them, it looked more like a personal service contract than something inherently linked to owning that specific piece of land.
Like he could have gotten his water delivered from anywhere.
Precisely. It wasn't about the land itself, but about a specific business arrangement.
Right.
And that distinction led to Eagle Enterprises losing the case.
So even though the original owners wanted it to run with the land, the court was like, nope, this is more like a personal deal.
That's the gist of it. And there's a good reason why courts are hesitant to enforce these types of affirmative covenants, the ones requiring someone to do something, like buy water in this case.
I'm guessing it has to do with not wanting to burden future owners with potentially unfair obligations. Like, hey, surprise, you have to buy water from this specific company forever.
You're on the right track. Imagine buying a house today and being stuck with a contract from decades ago that you had no say in. The court was concerned about that kind of situation. They also worried about restricting the ability to freely sell or transfer land. Who would want to buy a property chained to an outdated contract?
That's a good point. It would definitely impact the property's value.
For sure. So Eagle Enterprises really highlights the tension between honoring original intentions and protecting future owners from undue burdens.
Yeah, it's like walking a tightrope.
Exactly. You have to balance those competing interests.
Makes you think twice about those fine print details in a property contract.
Definitely worth a close read.
It sounds like Eagle Enterprises wasn't just about this one guy and his, well, it raised some bigger questions about what kinds of obligations should actually stick with a property.
It really did. It opened up a broader conversation. I mean, think about it. We live in a world of HOAs and increasingly complex rules tied to land ownership.
Yeah, that's true.
Where do we draw the line between legitimate land use restrictions and obligations that just go too far?
Okay, yeah, that's a good point. HOAs are known for having tons of rules. How does Eagle Enterprises play into that?
It goes back to that balance we were talking about between individual property rights and community regulation.
Mm-hmm.
On one hand, you want freedom to enjoy your property. But on the other, some rules help prevent conflicts, maintain property values, and ensure everyone's well-being. Eagle Enterprises shows how courts try to navigate that tension.
So if I'm on an HOA board and we're thinking about adding some new rules, are there any red flags from Eagle Enterprises that we should be watching out for?
Absolutely. Remember how the court wasn't keen on the water covenant because it seemed like a personal contract, not something truly affecting the land?
Right.
Well, HOAs need to be careful about that distinction, too.
Give me an example. What kind of HOA rule might raise those same red flags?
Let's say an HOA tries to mandate which internet provider residents have to use.
Okay.
That's probably going to run into trouble because it's more about a personal service, not land use itself.
I see. It's overstepping what an HOA should be regulating. What about financial burdens? The court in Eagle Enterprises was concerned about that too, right?
Right. So an HOA rule requiring perpetual payments for something that doesn't benefit the property itself could be seen as unreasonable. Imagine being forced to contribute to a community event fund year after year, even if you never attend those events.
It's like, where does it end? Mandatory landscaping services, a community-approved grocery delivery app.
Exactly. The key is to make sure any restrictions have a legitimate purpose related to the property or the well-being of the community as a whole.
I see.
Things that promote safety, prevent nuisances, or maintain the neighborhood's aesthetic are more likely to hold up.
So think carefully about the why behind each rule and if it truly benefits the community and the properties within it.
Exactly. And don't underestimate the power of clear communication. Rules should be easy to understand. No legal jargon.
Yeah, keep it simple.
Ambiguity just leads to headaches and potential lawsuits.
So in a way, the legacy of Eagle Enterprises is about finding that balance. We need some control over land use, but we also have to protect individual property owners.
I think that's a great takeaway. It's a reminder that these covenants are powerful tools, but they need to be used carefully. We have to think about the impact on everyone involved, both present and future owners.
Definitely a lot to think about.
Yeah.
It makes you wonder about other property disputes, where those lines can get blurry.
Oh, absolutely. And you know what else can get surprisingly complicated? The concept of adverse possession. Have you ever heard of that?
Wait, is that like squatter's rights? Can someone actually take ownership of a property just by living on it long enough, even if they don't technically own it?
That's a basic idea. Of course, it's not quite as simple as just setting up camp somewhere. There are specific legal requirements that have to be met, but the core concept is fascinating. If someone openly and continuously uses a piece of land for a long enough period, and the actual owner doesn't do anything to stop them, the law might eventually recognize the occupier's claim to ownership.
Okay, I'm definitely intrigued.
Yeah?
It's starting to sound like it could make for some wild stories.
Oh, there are some incredible adverse possession cases out there. We're talking about neighbors feuding over fence lines, families discovering long-lost property claims, even entire islands changing hands through years of continuous occupation.
Whoa, okay, you've got my attention. Let's hear about some of these cases and see how this adverse possession thing actually plays out in the real world.
I'm happy to share. Adverse possession really challenges our assumptions about what it means to own something.
I bet.
Especially land. It forces us to think about the balance between protecting traditional property rights.
Right.
And acknowledging the reality of someone who's been using a property for a long time, even without a formal deed.
All right, hit me with your most interesting adverse possession case.
All right, let's start with a case that really highlights the importance of open and notorious possession. Imagine a small town in the early 1900s. Two neighbors are having a dispute over a narrow strip of land between their properties. One neighbor has been using this strip for over 20 years, using it to access their backyard and even building a shed on it.
Okay, I'm all ears. Tell me about this family property claim and this surprise twist.
Picture this early 1900s quaint coastal town. The Smith family has owned a big chunk of beachfront property for generations.
Okay, I can see it.
But as time goes by, parts of it get neglected, you know, overgrown with weeds, looking abandoned.
Like forgotten, almost.
Exactly. Now, along come the Jones family. They move a town in the 1940s, and their property is right next to this seemingly forgotten piece of the Smiths' land.
Oh, interesting.
Over the years, they start using a section of it. They clear a path to the beach, plant a vegetable garden, even build a little storage shed.
So they're slowly making that abandoned land part of their own property.
Exactly. And they did this openly, continuously for decades. The Smiths, who were living somewhere else and rarely visited, seem to have no idea.
Okay, I'm on the edge of my seat. What happened next?
Well, fast forward to present day. The Smiths' descendants decide it's time to sell the beachfront property.
Makes sense.
A potential buyer is doing their due diligence and discovers the Joneses have been using a chunk of the land for ages.
Oh, no.
And guess what? The Joneses, armed with decades of open and continuous use, make a claim for adverse possession.
Wow. So even though they never had a deed to it, their actions basically gave them a legal right to that part of the property.
You got it. The court looked at the evidence and sided with the Joneses. They had successfully proven those key elements we talked about. Open and notorious possession.
Right.
Continuous use for the required time. And the real owners not taking any action.
That's amazing. It's like inheriting property.
Oh.
But you earn it through your actions, not through a will. What about the Smiths' descendants? They must have been shocked to lose part of their family land.
It definitely threw them for a loop. Yeah. It's a good reminder that property ownership isn't always set in stone. It can change over time because of how people use the land, whether they neglect it or even what their neighbors do.
So big lesson here. If you own property, especially if you don't live there all the time, it's crucial to keep an eye on things. Don't let neglect open the door for someone else to claim ownership through adverse possession.
Couldn't agree more. Regular visits, clearly marking your boundaries, and taking action if someone's encroaching on your land are all important for protecting your property rights.
Eagle Enterprises in these adverse possession cases have really opened my eye into the nuances of property ownership. It's fascinating how rights and obligations can shift over time. It's definitely not as simple as it seems.
Right. Property law is rarely straightforward. It's this blend of legal principles, historical context, and how society views land and ownership. And as our communities change and grow, I think we'll see even more complex property disputes pop up. It's a field that keeps us on our toes, constantly analyzing how people interact with the places they inhabit.
It makes you realize that even in a world of deeds and legal documents, actions often speak louder than words. If you want to secure your claim to something, especially land, you need to use it, protect it, and be ready to stand up for your rights.
Well said. And sometimes that vigilance can lead to some unexpected discoveries, like a long-lost property claim just waiting to be unearthed.
This has been an incredible deep dive. We've gone from water bills and wells to forgotten beachfront properties, uncovering the surprising ways that legal principles shape our world. Thanks for taking us on this journey.
The pleasure was mine. I always enjoy unraveling these legal mysteries and sharing these insights with our listeners.
And to our listeners, we hope this has sparked your curiosity about property law. The next time you see a fence line or hear about a neighborly dispute, remember the stories we've shared today. The world of property is full of twists and turns, and you never know what hidden claims might be lurking just beneath the surface. Until next time.